Dr. William Luther Pierce, the year 2000. The Health of the Nation.
Hello. A physician who wants to ascertain the health of a person checks his weight and blood pressure, listens to his heartbeat and breathing, examines his skin, and so on. The physician knows what signs to look for, what measurements to make in order to decide whether his patient is healthy or ill. He knows what signs are important and which have no fundamental significance. If we want to determine the health of a nation, we likewise look for signs and make measurements. And of course, it's necessary to understand which signs are the important ones. Most Americans today seem to believe that the only important signs are economic signs. They believe that if the stock market is going up, unemployment is low, and people are spending lots of money, everything is rosy. Which is to say, if they are economically comfortable, if they can buy the things they want, they are inclined to believe that the nation is healthy. Of course, they do worry a little about the schools, about the continual lowering of standards, about the substitution of more and more Mickey Mouse courses in place of history and mathematics and grammar. They have an occasional flash of worry that we may be raising a less competent generation than the one before. But hey, the economy is okay, so don't worry. They believe that we can spend more money on the schools, and that'll make up for the lower standards and the watered-down curriculum. They may become a little depressed when they look at the array of candidates running for public office. The polls show that approximately half the electorate is willing to vote for a loyal member of the gang which gave us the Bill and Monica show, and which last year willfully slaughtered white women and children in Belgrade for no good reason. And the other candidate really is not much better. He also would have unleashed the cruise missiles on the women and children of Belgrade in order to teach that guy Slobodan a lesson in democracy, rather than risk the wrath of Madeline and her tribesmen who had demanded the war against Serbia. Well, contemplating the candidates is depressing, but the malls are still full of shiny stuff waiting to be bought, and the limit hasn't been reached on the credit card yet, so the country must still be healthy. The average citizen certainly has misgivings when he reflects on the increasing darkening of America's racial complexion, when he notes, as Atlanta Braves pitcher John Rocker did, that fewer and fewer of the people he sees and hears on the sidewalks of our cities speak English or look like the sort of people he grew up with. But all of the media bosses and the politicians and even his priest or minister assure him that more diversity is good for America, that it strengthens our economy. So the country must be healthier than ever, right? No, not right. Judging the health of a nation by how much shiny junk is for sale in the shopping malls and how much the average citizen can charge on his credit card is like judging the health of a man on the basis of whether or not his shoes are shined and his fingernails are clean. There are several things which are important to the health of a nation, and these things have relatively little to do with shopping malls and credit cards. Natural resources are important, of course. A country rich in minerals and land and timber and fresh water is better off than one with fewer natural resources, other things being equal. Of course, it is seldom that other things are equal. The countries of Black Africa have enormously rich natural resources, but health-wise, they are all basket cases. Without the boost given to them by Europeans during the colonial period, their people still would be eating each other. Some of them still are, in fact. And since the Europeans gave up on their colonies, the Africans have been sliding back down into the jungle. They are unable to take care of themselves. Whenever a natural disaster occurs, as with the flooding in Mozambique recently, they are dependent on help from Watts. Japan, on the other hand, is very poor in natural resources, but nevertheless is infinitely healthier than any black country. The Japanese never ask for outside help from anyone. They take care of themselves. And despite their lack of minerals, they are enormously wealthy. So what's the secret? Why is Japan so much healthier, so much more fit than Mozambique, despite having so much less land and resources? Well, of course, you already know the answer. It's the difference in the quality of the people. For every nation, the one essential determinant of national health is the quality of the people who make up that nation, their genetic quality, which is to say their racial quality and their moral quality. Everything else, including the state of the economy, ultimately depends on these two elements. A nation whose population is intelligent, creative, resourceful, energetic, and able to solve problems and plan ahead ultimately will be a healthier nation than one whose people are dull, lazy, and able to think only about the present, regardless of mineral wealth or other advantages. Genes are the determining element. And a nation whose people are disciplined, racially conscious, and imbued with a strong sense of responsibility will be healthier than a nation whose people have the same genes but who are accustomed to permissiveness and self-indulgence and to thinking only about themselves, who do not feel any sense of belonging to their race or any sense of responsibility to it. When genes are equal, morality is the determining element. Now, with that introduction, let's talk about the immigration situation in this country. Let's talk about it in a specific and personal way. Roger Barnett is a rancher in Arizona. He has a cattle ranch in Cochise County in southeastern Arizona near the town of Douglas, which is right on the Mexican border. Last month, on the afternoon of February 19th, driving in his pickup truck along U.S. Highway 80 east of Douglas, he pulled alongside a van carrying 10 Mexicans. With horn honking and lights flashing, Barnett forced the van to stop. Determining that all 10 occupants of the van were illegal aliens, Barnett and his brother performed citizens' arrests of the Mexicans and escorted the van to the Border Patrol station in Douglas, where they turned the Mexicans over to the Border Patrol for deportation. Now, Roger Barnett is not a policeman, and he's not a Border Patrol agent. He's just a rancher, a private citizen. He'd much rather be tending to his cattle than rounding up illegal aliens. Yet in the last 2 years, he estimates that he's arrested more than 1,000, that's more than 1,000 illegal aliens on or near his ranch. That's getting close to 2 a day, and it doesn't leave him much time for ranching. He's not paid to apprehend illegal aliens, but he does it because the Border Patrol is, in effect, paid not to do it. And he does it because the Mexicans are ruining his ranch. Heading north across his land, they leave a trail of trash and filth and destroyed vegetation behind them. Where they camp, the ground is littered with debris and human feces. They cut down Barnett's trees for firewood to build campfires. Empty plastic bottles, discarded diapers, and other trash are everywhere, posing a hazard to his cows. The cows will eat plastic trash, and it jams up their digestive tract and kills them. It's not just a few Mexicans sneaking across the border. It's a non-stop flood, an invasion by a huge army. And the Border Patrol, under orders from the Clinton administration, deliberately lets the invaders come across the border, only pretending to try to stop them by arresting a few each day. Those few who are apprehended never are punished or imprisoned. They are simply sent back across the border to try again. When Barnett arrested the 10 illegals in the van on February 19th, the Mexican consul in Douglas, Miguel Escobar Valdez, tried to have him prosecuted for assault and unlawful imprisonment. A lot of other people also were wringing their hands and moaning about Barnett, quote, taking the law into his own hands. Local liberals and church spokesmen were complaining that he had intimidated the illegal aliens and violated their civil rights. The local prosecuting attorney, Chris Roll, said, and I quote, "This is conduct we all wish weren't happening and do not condone. Yet we cannot go forward unless there is sufficient evidence of a crime for a jury to convict." End quote. What that means in plain language is that the prosecutor would love to lock Barnett up for trying to keep the illegals away from his ranch, but he knows that he couldn't get a local jury to convict him for anything because all of the other ranchers and businessmen and homeowners in the area sympathize with Barnett, even if they don't have enough courage to do the same thing themselves. The liberals are hoping that one of Barnett's arrests of illegals will end up in a shooting. Then they will yell for Janet Reno, and Barnett will be prosecuted for a hate crime. You know, this goes far beyond the usual liberal bias in favor of the criminal and against anyone who gets tough with a criminal. The law is clear. The illegal aliens are breaking U.S. law simply by entering our country, completely aside from the laws they break after they are in the country by trespassing on Barnett's ranch and destroying his property. The U.S. Border Patrol is charged with keeping them out and with arresting them if they get in. But the U.S. Border Patrol is under the jurisdiction of the Immigration and Naturalization Service, and the Immigration and Naturalization Service is headed by a woman named Doris Meissner, who, even if she weren't a Jewess, would be carrying out the policy of the Clinton administration, which is to let anyone into the country who will strengthen the feminist, Jewish, homosexual, racial minority welfare coalition against the normal, healthy, self-supporting, heterosexual white men and women who used to be America. You might think the Republicans would raise hell about this policy, but they are afraid to. In the first place, they're afraid of being called racists by the media, and they're afraid that the Mexicans who are legally in the country will vote against them if they're seen as anti-immigrant. Of course, nearly all of those votes go to the Democrats anyway, but the Republicans believe that the Mexicans will continue swarming into the country because they think that Americans just aren't tough-minded enough to support the firm policies required to halt the flood. And so instead of trying to keep them out, the Republicans are trying to out-Democrat the Democrats in being nice to them. The fact is that the government could halt all illegal immigration immediately, and I mean today, if they wanted to, simply by announcing that anyone attempting to cross the border illegally would be shot on sight, and then demonstrating that we meant it. That would do it. We could spend the next 3 months building an adequate set of fences, installing intrusion sensors, and so on. But just shooting a few hundred illegals the first day would be enough to stop the flood. It wouldn't require any more resources than the Border Patrol is using now. All of the excuses we hear about the government not being able to afford enough Border Patrol agents to patrol the border, and that it's impossible to keep the Mexicans from climbing the fences we build or cutting through them or burrowing under them are simply lies. We could stop them all in a day with almost no effort. Of course, the liberals and the Jews and the media and the Christian churches would wail long and loud if the government actually got serious about protecting our borders. The government would have to be prepared to deal with them. But of course, the government isn't about to begin protecting our borders. Our real problem is that we don't have enough Roger Barnetts, and we don't have enough people who really understand how bad the problem is. The ranchers along the border understand. They see the size of the flood, and they also see the appalling lack of human quality among those who make up the flood. In the rest of the country, the perception is not as clear, but it is becoming clearer as the mestizos continue pouring in. Communities which 10 years ago had only a relatively small Mexican problem, and which 20 years ago had no Mexicans at all, are finding themselves overwhelmed by the Mexican invasion today. And these communities being overrun by mestizos are not just along the border. They are all over the country. The big agribusiness tycoons are importing them by the hundreds of thousands for farm labor, for work in poultry plants, and for other low-wage work. And the Clinton government is pretending not to notice. One of the worst offenders is Bill Clinton's bosom buddy and financial supporter, Arkansas chicken-processing billionaire Donald Tyson of Tyson Foods. As I said, the mestizo problem is spreading all over the country. Last month, my organization, the National Alliance, organized a public demonstration in Siler City, North Carolina, to protest the government's refusal to arrest and deport illegal aliens. 10 years ago, Siler City, a little town of about 6,000 residents, was almost entirely white. Today, it is 40% Mexican, because two poultry processing plants in the town have been bringing mestizo workers in, and the Immigration and Naturalization Service has done nothing to stop them. The government ignores its own laws, and because of this, the mestizo population of the state of North Carolina has doubled in the past decade. And let me tell you, the people do not like this. In communities such as Siler City, which have been especially badly impacted by the mestizo invasion, the people are angry. They don't like it that the schools, which were built with their taxes and used to be clean and safe and white, now are overrun with Mexicans. They don't like it that the drug problem and the gang problem and the crime problem and a dozen other big problems which came along with the Mexicans have made their town a far less pleasant place to live. Like John Rocker, they prefer their neighbors to be white and to speak English. Of course, the agribusiness tycoons, the Donald Tysons, don't really care what they prefer. And clearly, the government doesn't either. When the National Alliance was demonstrating in Siler City last month, the white citizens were on our side, and the media, the politicians, and the preachers were on the Mexican side. The media are on the Mexican side because multiculturalizing the country, destroying the white majority, is a deliberate policy with the media bosses. The politicians are on the Mexican side because the agribusiness tycoons and the media bosses are. The agribusiness people slip the money the way Donald Tyson used to slip money to Bill Clinton in Arkansas, and they know that if the media bosses turn against them, they'll never be allowed to win another election. Furthermore, they don't think the white citizens have the will to stop the invasion. The preachers are on the Mexican side because to them, a brown soul is as good as a white one. The churches had a few counter-demonstrators in Siler City carrying signs with slogans such as, "God sees no borders," and "The only race is the human race." Now, to return to the subject of national health, the mestizo invasion of the United States clearly is making a profound impact on the genetic constitution of our population. Our inability to stop this invasion is a clear indicator that our moral health already has suffered a profound impact. We need a million Roger Barnetts, and we have only a handful. The rest of the people who agree with him are too intimidated by the media to speak out. No, it's worse than that. They are too cowardly to speak out. Silicon Valley may be keeping the economy zooming along for now, but that is only a superficial sign of health, a misleading sign. America is like a man whose body is riddled with cancer, but who still manages to keep his shoes shined and his fingernails clean. Genetically, our health is declining fast. The government's Census Bureau estimates that somewhere between 30 and 50 years from now, the mestizos and the blacks together will outnumber the whites. That doesn't bother the preachers, of course, and it doesn't bother the agribusiness tycoons who figure that the cost of labor should be lower than ever. And it doesn't bother the politicians, so long as they still can count on their place at the public trough. And it pleases mightily the Jewish media bosses and their liberal camp followers who have been striving for that goal all along. But having their grandchildren growing up in a country where blacks and mestizos will outnumber them, a country with the sort of society that blacks and mestizos will transform our society into, a society of barrios and drugs and brutality and all-pervading corruption, that should concern decent, intelligent white people. And it does concern them when they're not too busy using their credit cards at the shopping mall or watching the ball game on TV. I mean, they know what is in store for America. They know that we will have a society which is a cross between that in Zambia and that in Nicaragua, the sort of society that blacks and mestizos always create. The Census Bureau has announced it. The Jews and liberals are gloating in anticipation. The fact that they know what is being done to America, and they know what is ahead for their grandchildren, and they haven't risen up in righteous fury and hanged every politician and every media boss and every agribusiness tycoon, is medical proof that morally the country already is dead and beginning to stink. Can a nation which is morally dead save itself from dying genetically as well? Are there still enough Roger Barnetts among us to turn the tide? Well, if I believed that it couldn't be done, I wouldn't be talking with you today. But I would appreciate some help. So would Mr. Barnett. Thanks for being with me again today.